The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
This evening is the shiur in honor of the approaching Chag HaShavuos. The holiday of Shavuos, Chag Matan Teresenu, the time when the Torah was given to us. At this time, one is obligated to speak of Milas HaTorah, the greatness of the Torah, which we received on Sinai, which came to the world, was brought into the world through Yisrael, Ayde Meisha Rabbeinu, through Meisha our teacher. Now, in current times, we hear quite often the phrase Torah values. Actually, the title of the topic which we are discussing this evening is Torah Values or the Value of Torah. Now, to speak of Torah values is something quite good. What should be wrong with that? But it does lend an indication that we are extracting certain virtues and certain values of the Torah, and we are placing them in society together with many other values, and we're comparing them to many other values, and we are making reference that Torah values can also contribute to society just as other values, and many times even better than other values. And this is unintentionally a vast distortion of what the value of Torah is. Let me cite a few makeres, a few sources from the Chazal. One is the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos, Perek Omer Rabbi Akiva Daf Pei Ches. The Gemara tells us, "Vayishatzu b'sachti sohor." Klal Yisrael stood beneath the mountain at the time of the receiving of the Torah. Omar Avabdimi Barchama Barchasu Melamed Shekofa HaKadosh Baruch Hu Aleihem Esohor Kegigais V'Omer Lehem Im Atem Mekablim HaTorah Mutav V'Im Lav Shom Tehei Kfuraschem. From the expression in the Torah, they stood beneath the mountain. It should have said they stood at the mountain. This is to teach us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu lifted up the mountain over them, like some type of giant utensil. And he told Klal Yisrael, "I am now offering you my Torah. Then you have agreed to accept. But you better accept. Because if you do, good. If not, then I will drop the mountain on you. And this will be your burial place." What the Gemara is telling us, that Torah was not something of a value to the world, but was imperative to the world. If Klal Yisrael would bring Torah to the world, good. If not, then you will be buried here. Another example, also the Gemara on the same daf. Omer Chizkio. Chizkio said, "My deceive." This is what it states in Tehillim. Mishomayim hishmato din eretz yoro vishokoto. That the heavens heard the law of the Torah coming into the world. The earth trembled and then was quieted. From the heavens, they heard the law coming into the world. The earth trembled and then was quieted. What does this mean? Im yiroah lama shokoto. Im shokoto lama yiroah. If they trembled, so then why was it quiet? Did it become quiet? And if the earth was quiet and relaxed, so why did it tremble? Ela b'tchila yiroah. In the beginning, it trembled. Ule b'seif shokoto. And in the end, it was quieted. Why? Kidereish Lokish. Like Reish Lokish darshaned, expounded. It states in the Torah, by Maase Bereishis, the creation of the world, Vayiyere Vayivoker Yom HaShishi. At the end of the 6 days of creation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, and it was evening and morning on the sixth day. And every day, he did not refer to it with the Heayidiyah, as that day. The sixth day, he referred to it as this sixth day. Heayiseder Lomali. Why? Melamed shehisna HaKadosh Baruch Hu Maase Bereishis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that this sixth day has a special meaning. This sixth day is hinged to another sixth day of history. Im Yisrael Mekablim HaTorah, Atem Miskayomim. He told the Maase Bereishis, he told the creation, that if Yisrael will accept Torah and bring it into the world on that other sixth day, the sixth day of Sivan, the day which HaKadosh Baruch Hu will come to offer his Torah to Israel, then Atem Yiskayomim, then you, the creation, can remain. But Im Lav, if they will not accept it, Ani Machzir Eschem LeTohu Bavohu, then I will reverse you into the voidness and nothingness that you were before the creation. That's why it states, Vayiyere Vayivoker Yom HaShishi, at the end of the Melocha, at the end of the works of the 6 days of creation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, and it was evening and morning on that sixth day, which is dependent on the sixth day of Sivan. Again, Torah was not coming to give values to the world. It was imperative to the world. And if it would be brought into the world, good. If not, then there would be no world. Another example. Again, the Gemara. Here on the Pei Ches, but Omid Beis. Omid Bishuv ben Levi. Bishosh Olameish Lamorum. Omru Malachi Ashores Livnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At the time when Moshe came up to the heavens to receive the Torah, the angels of high said to Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam, Master of the Universe, Ma'ale Yelud Isho Beineinu, what is a human being doing between us? Omer Lahen Lekabel Torah Bo. So Hashem said, he's come here to receive the Torah and to take it into the earth. Omru lefonov, the angel said, Chamuda genuza, your most precious jewel, your most precious treasure, shenignuzu lecho tishame os vishivim va'arbederus kodim shenivra olam, which has been concealed with you for 974 generations from before the creation of the world, and you want to give it to human beings. And from here there came out to be a whole clash where the angels refused to allow HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give his most valued treasure, which was created 974 generations before the creation, to man. There was a whole dialogue. Hashem told Moshe, argue with the angels. Finally, they agreed. Another example. In Mishlei, in Perek Gimel, Pasuk Tes Vov, states as follows. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Yekora hi mipnimim, b'chol hafotzecho lo yishvu bo. Hashem says, she is more precious to me than pearls. He's referring to the Torah. And all of your desires, all of your worldly desires, do not equal her value. From here is implied, Torah is very, very precious, more precious than pearls, and all of your desires do not equal her value, but I have desires that do equal her value. Then there's another posuk, another statement in Mishlei. This is in Perichas, posuk Yud Aleph. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ki tova chochma mipnimim v'chol chafotzim lo yishvu bo. Her wisdom, the Torah's wisdom, is more precious than pearls, and all desires, both your desires and my desires, do not equal her value. So the first pasuk it states, "V'chol chafotzecho lo yishvu bo." All of your desires will not equal her values, but it seems to imply my desires will. The second pasuk it states, "Kol chafotzim," all desires in the world, yours and mine, do not equal her value. It's a contradiction. The Gemara asks the contradiction in Masechet Meid Kotten Daf Tes Reish Omer Beis. And the Gemara says, "Kan be mitzvah she efshe la'asoso al yedei acherim, kan be mitzvah she e efshe la'aseso al yedei acherim." The first pasuk is speaking the second pasuk is speaking by a mitzvah where it's possible to fulfill that mitzvah through another. In that case, if you are studying Torah and a mitzvah comes to you, but it's possible that that mitzvah will be taken care of by someone else, then you should let that other person do it and you carry on with your study of Torah. And that's what is meant. She is more precious to me than all desires. Your desires and my desires, even my mitzvahs. Other pasuk is referring to a mitzvah she'iyah shalaseis al yidei acherim. If you are studying Torah and a mitzvah comes to you, and this mitzvah cannot be fulfilled by another person, then you must leave the study of the Torah and go do the mitzvah. That's what the pasuk states. She is more precious to me than all of your desires, but not my desires. Here we see the greatness of mitzvahs, and even more so the greatness of Torah, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Torah to me is more valuable than everything in the world, and even at times more valuable than everything in the heavens, even more than mitzvahs, if that mitzvah can be performed by others. In Yishalmi, at the beginning of Masech Tepeya, Perek Aleph Halacha Aleph, the Maral brings this in Yishalmi, Nesivat Torah, in Perek Aleph, Daf Ches. Reb Rachya and Reb Chiya, the Kfar Tchumim. Reb Rachya and Reb Chiya, they had two opinions. Chad Omar Kol Ha'Elam Ein Shove LeDove Echod MiDivrei Torah. One said that the whole world is not equal to one, the Dover Echod MiDivrei Torah, to one excerpt of Torah. Chad Omar Afilu Kol Mitzvesov Ein Shove LeDove Echod MiDivrei Torah. And the other said that not only the whole world is not equal in value, not only the whole world is not equal in value to one excerpt of Divrei Torah, but even all of the mitzvahs of Hashem are not equal in value to one excerpt of Divrei Torah, which a person learns. From here we see even further that when we're speaking of the value of Torah, we're not referring to the value of studying Torah an entire life. The value of the Torah of the great Gaonim. We're speaking of the value of Torah, of even one word of Torah. Kol ha'olam ein shove ledover echod. One excerpt of Torah. One sentence of Torah that a person will learn. Shalmi says, has more value than the entire world. Now, from these few sources that we've quoted in regards to the value of Torah, what is the meaning of this? How is this possible? Without Torah, there would have been no creation. There could be no universe. Torah is more dear to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than everything. And even Dover Echad, even one excerpt of Torah, one sentence. The answer is not as difficult as one might think. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, He said at the end of creation, "Vayara Lakim is kol asher osa vihine tov meod." When Hashem created the world, He saw that everything that He made was good, very, very good. He created a world which HaKadosh Baruch Hu called tov, tov meod, good. Exceedingly good. It's a wonderful world He created. But He was not referring to the physical world in isolation. He was referring to the whole world that He created. A physical world infused by a spiritual world. As mentioned many times, He created the world with the yud and the hay of His name, the yud and the dalet, excuse me, the yud and the hay, and He created two worlds, the olam haba with the yud, and this world with the hay. He created them both together, and this world He created with a hay, because a hay is a combination of a dalet and a yud. The dalet represents physical dimensions, physical world. Anything that's physical has to have a dimension. And the Dalet is a vertical and a horizontal, represents dimension. And the Yud has no dimension. It represents a non-dimensional world, a non-physical world. And this world He created with a hay, because He infused the non-physical into the physical. And this is what He was referring to when Bayar Hashem, that Hashem saw is kol asher also, everything that He made, vihine tov meod, and it was good, and it was exceedingly good. But if one takes the physical world and detaches it from the spiritual world, he detaches it from that infusion of Torah, then it's a very lowly world. Not only is it a lowly world, it's a very ugly world. And it's what the Chazal refer to as an Olam Shel Cheshech, an Alma de Shikra, a world of darkness and a world of deceit. Therefore, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, he said, "Bereishis bara Elokim es hashamayim ves haaretz." The beginning, Hashem created the heavens and the earth. Right at the beginning, Chazal Dashin, Bereishis, Bishvil HaTorah Shenikra is Bereishis, Ubishvil Yisrael Shenikra is Bereishis. He created it because there would be a Torah, and there would be a Yisrael that would bring Torah into the world. If not for that, he didn't want that world. That world is an Olam of Choshech. It's a world of darkness. And in the creation it states, "Bihi Barom." These are Elu told the Shemayim Oretz, "Bihi Barom." These are the creations of heaven and earth as he created them. And the Gemara says, "Ibaram Osius Abraham." These are the letters of Abraham. Bishvil Abraham. It was because of Abraham. Because Abraham was going to be the first that would bring the light of Torah into the world. And further, when he said, "Vayhi Or, let there be light," he wasn't merely referring to let there be a physical light in the world. That he was referring to. But he was referring to let there also be a spiritual light in the world. And the Medrash says, "Vayhi Or ze Abraham." Abraham would be the first one to bring that spiritual light into the world. The world which he created with this light became a guf and a neshama, a physical body with a life, a spiritual life, like a body and a soul. What is a world without Torah? That becomes a body without a nefesh and a neshama, a body without a life and a soul. What is a body without a life and a soul? That's a golem. That's a mace. That's a corpse. What is beautiful and good about a corpse? This is what Torah is to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world. So when we speak of Torah, and we speak of Torah values in the world, which infers that amongst the many good things in the world, Torah also has what to contribute to the world. It also has values. And some, if its values can be even better than other values, there cannot be anything more distorted. But we must speak not of Torah values in the world, but of what the value of Torah is in the world. And that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, "Lo yishvu kol hafotzim." There is nothing which equals the value of my Torah in the world. The world I created, the Torah was its life, is its life, is its light, is its soul. Remove this from my world, and it is the same as removing the soul and the life from a human being
which he remains a mere corpse. This is what happens to the world when you remove my light of Torah from it. That's why the Chazals expound Torah was imperative. You come to create a human being. You don't say one of the values of the human being is the life it has. That's an imperative of the human being. Otherwise, he's not a human being. And if Israel would not have accepted Torah, then there would have been no creation. Now, the Chazal teach us all of the time that really we have difficulty in recognizing the value of anything unless we examine it in a situation where that value is totally lacking. For example, we do not see the value of light unless we have darkness. If a person is in a place where there is no light, he's in a cave, then when the light comes, he can realize and appreciate the value of light. Those people who were never in a place of total darkness can never really discern the value of light. Those people who were never hungry can never discern the true value of bread. A person who lacks water, he's crossing a desert for days. When he gets his glass of water, then he realizes what water is to the human being. This is the only way we really discern a value. And we have jewels in our midst all of the time, which we're not even aware of their value. For example, air. We go around every second of the day taking air into our systems. If one wants to appreciate what air is, what oxygen is to the human being, heaven forbid if he would be in a state of lack of oxygen, if he would be drowning, if he would be high up where there is no oxygen, and then all of a sudden he would be given air, then he would see, not only would he appreciate it, he would see what the value is. So for one to appreciate the value of Torah, the true value of Torah, he has to examine it against a world where there is no Torah. And that's not difficult. To find a world without Torah is not difficult at all, because that's been the nations of the world since the creation. Let us just mention one little prat, just one little aspect of the world of the nations of the world, an olam bli Torah, a world without Torah, because on this is endless. Let's speak about not 5,000 years or 5,700 years since creation. Let's speak about this. Let's speak about this century only, past 100 years. And let's not talk of too wide of an area. Let's only talk about one specific area, war and bloodshed of this past century. And it was once written in the late President Nixon's book. This was a good number of years ago. where this century has seen over 100 years. That was long before, many years before we're coming into the 90s. Let's not talk about 100 wars, which could have doubled by now. Let's talk just of a few. There was World War I, which is calculated took the lives of 8.5 million people. Achazal speak about taking the life of one person. You could imagine taking the life of 10 people, 100 people, 1,000 people, 100,000 people. World War I, there was a war mostly in Europe. North America was involved in it. It took the life of 8.5 million people. It's the size of many, many countries. World War II took the life. Now this is a, I must thank Stephen Kravitz for doing some of this research for me. This is quoted as the very, very minimal amount. It took the life of 48 million people. Of the 48 million, we know there were 6 million Jews, 3 million in Poland alone, 24 million Russians. This includes Russian Jews. 48 million. That would be like a devastation of perhaps almost twice the size of South Africa. These are minimal numbers. We saw a further war, Vietnam. They calculate up to 4 million deaths. So we've spoken now of 60 million people killed by wars. 60 million by wars of the nations. This gets into Asia. One of the reasons cited recently why President Truman decided to use atomic warfare against Japan, even though the Allied forces were seemingly capable of eventually destroying them, is because, and since then more has come out on this, because they uncovered plans in which Japan had called upon what they refer to as national suicide, that they would never surrender, but they would fight down to the last of every man, woman, and child. They called it national suicide in honor of the nation and the emperor. And that would have prolonged the war for many, many, many extra months and could have inflicted an extra 100,000 casualties of U.S. and Allied servicemen. So they were speaking of a nation. Japan today is one of the financial and industrial giants of the world. From the best of the nations of the world today, who had a plan of national suicide where every man, woman, and child would be killed in their war of aggression, which they wanted to become, to become a power in the world with more land. So we've gone to Europe, North America, Asia. Let's go to our own Africa. In our own lives in the past few years, we've heard of wars of Africa and Ethiopia, Somalia, Rwanda, Burundi, and the Shfichas Domim, the bloodshed has been enormous. There's another place though that doesn't seem to get that much exposure, and that's a war going on in North Africa, in Sudan. Recently, There was an article in the British Economist not long ago, but there was just an article in a recent Reader's Digest where they write, this doesn't seem to be that important of a war. It doesn't get that much exposure. 1.2 million people have lost their lives in that war. And 5 million people have been uprooted and displaced from their homes by the enemies. So this is a more unimportant war. 1.2 million people lost their lives, and 5 million people were uprooted and chased out of their homes, many of them taken and sold as slaves between the two opponents in that warfare. Now, here we spoke of a few wars. We didn't speak of 100 wars, of 200 wars, we didn't speak of 5,000 years. A few wars during the past years. Millions and millions of people. Let's go to money. What were the costs of these wars? In general, historians do not like to calculate costs of wars because it's unending. What do you calculate? But the cost of World War I, they calculated at $337 billion. Now, this was an encyclopedia in 1976. And Stephen wasn't sure if this was 1976 dollars or 1920 dollars. But at any rate, even if it was 1976 dollars, you could imagine what it would be in 1996 dollars. $337 billion. World War II, the cost is beyond calculation. Vietnam, I recall hearing Senator Robert Kennedy speaking before the Congress during the Vietnam War, where he stated he was calling to an end of the war. And he stated that this war is costing the United States $1 million every 1/2 hour. He says this war is costing the United States $1 million every 1/2 hour. Now, if we calculate that, that would be approximately $50 million a day, or 220 million rand per day, or $1.5 billion per month, or 6.5 billion rand per month. There's a war costing the United States 6.5 billion rand per month, but we must take this into consideration. This was in the 60s. Not in 1996, but in the 60s. Which, that figure inflates enormously. This was only the United States, the costing of the United States. Now, there was no destruction in the United States. It's all that was costing the United States was for armaments to cause devastation in Vietnam. This does not take into the cost to Vietnam or to the other countries. And if my memory serves me right, I believe they stated that this was the longest war that America ever had. So we're talking about something like 6 billion rand per month the United States has cost. The longest war in the history of the United States. In summary, when we're talking about monies, the costs to the world economies, the natural resources, the environment, the ecology, is too much for the mind to grasp. The wars have caused billions of tons of steel, of rubber, of wood, of petrol, you name it, of resources to be drawn up from the earth, only to be blown to bits and to lie and rot at the bottom of the seas and to further pollute HaKadosh Baruch Hu's oceans. It's caused cities of buildings, of skyscrapers, of homes, of transportation systems, communication systems, energy systems, water systems, which cost mega billions of dollars to build and mega billions of man hours, only to be continually reduced to rubble in the continuous ongoing wars of the goyim of the world. And then the cleanup of the mess cost other billions. It's destroyed years and years of yield and produce from forest lands, from farm lands, from grazing lands, from rivers, which can take decades or centuries for them to recover. And this is not only in our century. There's a new book that came out called The Jews of Lithuania by Masha Greenbaum. It covers Lithuania from 1316 to 1945. When you read that book, outside of the Jewish community, the powers of Europe, there was Austria, there was Poland, Prussia, Russia. It is a constant digest of war from 1316 to 1945. Every 5 or 10 years was another power struggle, another war, until the next one came to power. Now, we've only spoke here of war and some of its costs in human life and in dollars. What about other calamities that the nations of the world that live without Torah have brought into the world? For example, today we have a world plague of AIDS, which is bringing devastation to life and resources. And then, after all of this, they have the chutzpah, the audacity, to mobilize public opinion for population control and further shvichas dom, further bloodshed. For example, China has a national policy that by law you have to put to death, after 1 or 2 children, you have to put to death anyone that's born. It's a law in the hospitals because of population control. On what basis? On the basis that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world, his earth, is not capable of sustaining life. World was not created, the Kefirim say. The world was not created to sustain so much life. We have to control the population. The Pella, the wonder is that after 5,000 years of wars by the nations of the world, the earth is capable of sustaining any life. From here we see the godless, the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creation. That for 5,000 years, almost all of the nations of the world have tried to destroy the universe, and it still sustains life on the universe. And they have the chutzpah to say the earth was not created with the capabilities to sustain life, so much life. Now, this is a little insight, very little, into a world without Torah. From here we can see a little of what is the value of Torah to the world. So we're not speaking of Torah values. There are American values, there are Christian values, there are Greek values, there are Roman values, and there are Torah values. We're speaking of light and life in a world without light and a world without life. Now, a person has to know that all that one learns of Torah, he is bringing more light to the world. Just as the stars give light to the world, all that one learns, he brings more light to the world. And if he teaches this to others, then even more so. Marbe yeshiva, marbe chochma, the Mishnah Novice tells us. Perek Beis Mishnah Ches. The more yeshiva is, the more wisdom of Torah there is brought to the world. Marbe Torah, marbe chayim. The more light of Torah is brought into the world, the more life is into the world. While those who live without Torah are occupied by bringing death into the world by the millions, and destruction, devastation to the world. Marbe yeshiva, marbe chochma. Marbe chochma shel Torah, marbe chayim. Those that study the Torah and teach the Torah are occupied with bringing life into the world. And afil dover echot, even one teaching of Torah. The Maral writes, he writes this in the Mishnah Perek Dalet, Mishnah Yud Aleph, of Masechta Ovis. Why even one word of Torah? One sentence of Torah? Because you cannot isolate Torah from itself. When you learn one sentence of Torah, you are becoming bound up with the entire Torah. And the entire Torah is greater than this whole universe. That's why afilu dover echod min haTorah, even one sentence of the Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, is more dear to me than the entire world. And the Vilna Gaon writes, quoted many times at the beginning of Masechta Peah, that it states Talmud Torah keneged kulam, the greatest mitzvah equal to all mitzvahs is the study of Torah. It's not referring to the study of an entire daf Gemara, a whole page of Gemara. It's referring to even the study of one word of Torah is equal to all of the mitzvahs of the Torah. Again, because you cannot isolate Torah from itself, you become bound up with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's entire Torah, an entire light. And this is why the Mishnah in Perek Gimel, Mishnah Yud, says, what happens if a person studied Torah and now he goes away from Torah and he wants to eradicate it from his mind, he wants to forget it? The Mishnah Perek Yud, Mishnah Yud states, Reb Deiste Bar Yanai Mishum Remea Emer Kol HaShicheach Dove Echod Mimishnosai. Whoever forgets one word of his learning, later on the Mishnah explains this is where he forgets it with intention, he tries to forget it, Malala Makosov Kil Mishai Benafshoy. It's as if he is losing his life. You lose Torah, you're losing part of your life. Because Marbe Torah, Marbe Chayim. If Torah brings life to a person, it brings light to a person, then he should know that when he loses that Torah, he is losing life and light. And therefore, the Mishnah tells us in Perek Vov, Mishnah Gimel, which we learned from David HaMelech, Alei min mechaveiro perek echod, o aloha achas, o posuk echod, o dibar echod, afilo os echos. If someone teaches you, or you learn from your chaver, a chapter of Torah, a aloha, a law, a sentence, one word of Torah, even one letter of Torah, tzorech linag by kovet, he is considered your Rebbe and you have to give him honor. Because a father and mother are those who brought him into the world physically. And a Rebbe is someone who gives him life in the next world, spiritual life. And even one word of Torah, he is giving him more spiritual light. Therefore he's your Rebbe, and you have to give him honor. Shekein motzino b'dover ha-melech. Yisrael shalei lama me'achisefa le'lishnei dvorim bilvad. David, king of Israel, learned only two laws from Achisefa. And he called him my Rebbe. My confidant. So how much more so by us? Now, we are not referring and saying, some people become confused, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, more precious to me than anything in the world is Torah. We're not saying there's only Torah in the world. And there's nothing else. No, to the contrary. Someone who lives without Torah, he lives with nothing. You see the world he has. It's a world of constant bloodshed of millions and devastation and destruction. Someone who lives with Torah, then he has everything. Then he has the world. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. Vayar Hashem bihinei tov me'od. After he created this wonderful world, he said, it's wonderful. It's full of brachas. You see the brachas. For 5,000 years, what the nations of the world have been doing to the earth. And it's still capable of sustaining so much life. And he saw it's wonderful. But he was speaking of a world infused with Torah. He who lives without Torah, he has nothing. He has a world of darkness and deceit. He has a body without a life, a corpse. He who lives with Torah, then he has the entire world. An example. Mordechai gives an example in Masechet Beitzah. The Gemara says that every bit of eating that we do on Shabbos, takes on a dimension that eating during the week cannot compare to. When you eat during the week, you take a snack, it's not considered of a very important dimension. Shabbos, you take a snack. It takes on a great dimension. Mora says, why? Because v'korosa l'Shabbos oneg. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave a broch on Shabbos that everything should have so much enjoyment. And therefore, even a small snack even the Gemara says, a bite of fruit. And Shabbos takes on a very, very important dimension. Now, why is that? Because Nefesh Yisera, a person was given an extra dimension of Torah, of spiritual life on Shabbos. Doesn't manifest itself only in the spirit. It manifests itself in the whole world. Shabbos, it's not because he has the Nefesh Yisera, he has merely that. The world becomes a different world for him on Shabbos, to the point where even what he eats is different. Those who live without Torah live in darkness. Those who live with Torah have light in even what they eat and what they drink and in everything that they do in the world. Therefore, more important than emphasizing Torah values, we must emphasize the value of Torah. My Rebbe Rav Gifter was asked once to speak to the leaders of Torah Mesorah. Torah Mesorah was the body, umbrella organization for the day schools throughout America. So he spoke on the function of Torah Chinuch, of Torah education in our generation. And it's printed in his Sefer, which is in English, Torah Perspectives, page 22. So he writes as follows. The function of Torah Chinuch is the creation of a society. What is the purpose when you teach? When you teach today, children, what is the purpose? Where Torah will not merely be one of a vast number of human interests. He says what's similar to what we're saying. Not where you teach them that there are many values in the world and there are many interests in the world, but we want to teach you another interest and another value, that of Torah. Not merely where one of the vast number of human interests, but rather a society where all human interest and all human endeavor centers in and emanates from Torah. This is the object of chinuch when you teach a child. That the whole world, which is in front of him, the whole wonderful world, must be strained through Torah. Torah is its heart. Torah to the world is what the breath of life is to man. You don't tell man that there are many important parts to you. And one of the important parts is your breath of life. Because the breath of life, this is why you are a living being. The worlds live because Torah is its breath of life. Then he goes further. Our rabbis long ago said, the Holy One, blessed be He, wished to purify Israel. Therefore did He give them much Torah and many mitzvahs. Rotza HaKadosh Baruch Hu lezakeis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to purify Israel. And therefore He gave them Torah, Hirbalahem Torah, u'mitzvahs. So Rav Gifter writes, it is taken for granted, Chazal took it as an axiom, that without Torah there can be no zakus ha-nefesh, no purity of soul. The only way there can be zakus ha-nefesh, purity of soul, is rotza HaKadosh Baruch Hu lezakeis es Yisrael lachein hirba lehem Torah mitzvahs, only through Torah and mitzvahs. For the human being is laden with the dross and alloy of earthly sensory lusts and temptations. These tend to make of the human a beast rather than the personification of the Tzelem Elokim. We are speaking of two extremes. We are speaking of a Tzelem Elokim, a creature in the divine image, and we are speaking of a beast. And we see it. That which we spoke about, which caused devastation to 60 million people. That's the manifestation of the beast. Yisrael, which brought Torah into the world, and to those that followed it, that's the manifestation of the Tzelem Elokim, to the divine creature in the divine image, a creature endowed with intellectual perception, which makes it possible for him to see, observe, and grasp things in a pure intellectual form, not subject to material sensory limitation. The purity of the human being comes only one way. Rotza HaKadosh Baruch Hu lezakis es Yisrael lochein hirba lehem Torah u'mitzvos. Through Torah and through its mitzvahs, then human mankind becomes Tzelem Elokim, in the image of the Almighty. Without it, then he becomes a human beast. Many times you speak to parents, and they say, I want a balance for my son. I have nothing against him studying Torah. Nothing against him studying Torah. But let there be a balance. He's gone to King David for 12, 13 years now. Now he has to pursue the world. I asked him, you're taking King David? I said, what? What did he do there? How much Torah studies did he have? Many times the son is sitting there. How much did you have in King David? Or any such school? Oh, he said, maybe an hour or two a week. And I said, and how many hours have you studied secular subjects? Oh, 5, 6, 7 hours a day. So you're studying 30 hours a week secular subjects, and 2 hours a week, or 1 hour a week Torah subjects. And when did you start secular subjects? 5 or 6 years old. And when will you finish your secular subjects? Well, I'll probably get my honors in university when I'm about 25. So for 20 years you're going to pursue secular subjects at 6, 7 hours a day. And what are you going to do after that? I'll pursue my career till 60 when you retire, or 65. And I look at the parents and I'm saying, you're speaking of balance? Is that what you're referring to? Balance? You're talking here of an hour and a half a week of Torah studies, and 80 years or 70 years, almost a full day, pursuing the material world. And you're speaking of balance? This is not what the sages are speaking of. And this is why Rebbe Akiva was referred to as such a great individual. We spoke about him last week on Lag BaOmer. Such a great individual. And Mishemes Rebbe Akiva, the Mishnah tells us at the end of Saita, Bottle Kover HaTorah, the one who knew the value of Torah. Because Rebbe Akiva was the one who insisted, expounding from the Torah every letter, and called kutz for kutz, every crown and every stroke of the pen. Because he knew that concealed in the Torah, in one letter, in one word, in one stroke of the pen, was enough light for an entire universe. And this is what he wanted to bring out. And Rashi explains, he was known, he excelled in giving honor to Torah more than anyone else. Why? Because he knew the value of Torah. This was the value of Torah. When every word of Torah is a gem that can bring new light into the world. And when he died, there was no one that could duplicate this. So therefore, Mishameis, Rebbe Kiva, bottle cover a Torah. This dimension of honor to Torah, that someone could see that value in Torah. This was by Rebbe Kiva. And once he died, that dimension was lost. And this, he said over from Chaim Volozhiner, the Talmud of the Gaon. The Gaon was the one also that didn't leave one letter uncovered. And this was infused in his Talmud. And Chaim Volozhiner once said, he was known for his tefillos, for his power of prayer. And he once said, he says, all my prayers, all my tefillos, I am willing to give up if someone will teach me one new halacha of Torah, which is Torah Lamito, which is to the truth of Torah, which I have not learned till now. That I'll exchange for all of my prayers. He had learned from his Rebbe what is Torah. And this charge was given to Klal Yisrael to bring into the world a soul and a life for the world, so the world can be the place which HaKadosh Baruch Hu envisioned to create. This is their charge. When they said, Nasa v'nishma, we will accept the Torah. Therefore, the greatest honor that we can give to Torah is to constantly realize not Torah values, but the value of the Torah. Where every additional Torah that we bring to ourselves and bring to the world is bringing new breaths of life into a body, which will give it life and light. May we all be zeicher to a chag matan teiruseinu, a chag sameach, and where we will rise, constantly rise to greater heights all of the time in bringing out the light of the Torah, where it can bring this light to the world of darkness that we currently live in.
Thank you. The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226 Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.